What's good, everybody, and welcome to Body Bag Podcast. I'm Chris Thomas, and with me, as always, Broke Rider Dave.
No, it's not. I'm
It's not.
Superman.
You know, it's, I was like, damn it, I was gonna do an intro too, but you beat me to it. I was gonna say, but Dave, what is that up in the sky? It's a bird. It's a plane. Well, actually, it might be a plane because we can't keep our planes out of the from crashing over here in America. But
Right.
who's catching that plane? It's Superman.
Yeah.
I guess actually it's you though, Dave. So thank you for your service.
You're welcome. A long day's work.
I guess we're still hanging out in the 70s.
Yeah.
Our last Versus, which should be coming out. Well, it'll be out by now, was the best 70s 70s horror that we could think of at the time. It just so happened that when it was my turn to pick the double feature, I stayed in the same decade, but also stayed with the same director because Superman is directed by the same guy who did The Omen.
Really? Okay.
Yes, Richard Donner, I believe.
A very wide range of movies.
Yeah, that dude, like, he made The Omen, which I already like. He made Superman, which, whether or not I liked it or not, we'll get into. But he also did Goonies. So for Goonies alone, he's always going to have a lifetime pass for me.
Yeah.
But we also paired it because this is a horror channel. I wanted to stick with I didn't mind doing another Wes Craven movie.
Yeah.
Give a little gift back to Dave. We did Last House on the Left, so I didn't know he had a movie that came out that year. So Wes Craven it is with Summer of Fear.
Summer of Fear, which is actually a TV movie.
Yeah, I saw that because when I was trying to look it up, I kept getting a different name of a movie called Stranger in the House.
Yeah, I saw that too. I was like, well, what is what? Yeah.
I mean, either way, luckily it was free on Tubi.
Yeah. Thank God for Tubi.
Yes, thank God for Tubi. I've gone ahead and washed my hands off of trying to get a Shudder sponsorship, but Tubi,
Tubi's dope. If you guys aren't subscribed, go ahead, subscribe. And we're not sponsored in any way, but it's just a really good app to have.
Yeah, I mean, I'll promote them so long as they stay free.
Yeah, exactly. And like the ads are kind of misplaced, so they pop up at the funniest times sometimes.
That's part of the charm.
Yeah.
But so we're gonna do this kind of like how we did the verses, where we'll break it down a little bit and then talk about it. Don't want to be too long into the. But I think that's kind of okay anyway, because with this you have two movies, one that's a fairly easy story to follow, and another one whose story we've probably been told since we were kids. Like, and we live in an era of superhero movies.
Yeah.
Are we getting started with the non-horror and then ending with horror?
We could start with Superman, but
Okay.
before we get into the movie, who was your favorite actor to play Superman and who's been your favorite Lex Luthor you've seen so far?
I would answer. I kind of want to answer, but it would also kind of you'll kind of guess which direction I'm headed in terms of scoring.
Okay. All right.
Because all right, I'll leave it
Well,
vague. I'll leave
yeah,
it
we'll
vague
loop
until we,
back
but
at the
I
end then,
will,
yeah.
yeah. But I will say of these, I'm familiar with a few Supermen. I'm
Yeah.
now familiar with Christopher Reeve Superman. I'm familiar with Henry Cavill. I grew up on the Justice League animated Superman,
Yep.
and from the little bits I've seen of the trailer, I am hopeful for this upcoming Superman. I mean, I'm not a big Superman, like, diehard fan. In fact, I'm getting superhero fatigue as of late.
Right.
But I still thought, you know what? Pay homage. Plus, it just so happened that Gene Hackman died
Yeah.
not too long ago, so I figured we could just dedicate this one to Gene Hackman.
But Nicholas Holt playing the new Lex Luthor. That's gonna be interesting.
That's interesting because I really like Nicholas Holt.
Yeah, I'm such a big fan of his, so like the actor playing Superman, I really don't know. Yeah, but Nicholas Holt, I'm like almost everything I've seen him in, he's been pretty good, so.
All right. And I'm willing to give him, he wouldn't have been my first thought to pick him, but he's definitely a better choice than like Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, but it's always the unconventional choices that are pretty good too. Like
But
John
okay.
Cryer playing Lex Luthor. surprisingly good.
Not to give any answers, but I will just tell you what I think of Henry Cavill and what I think of the DC animated series Superman. Henry Cavill, I thought, was serviceable. I think he looks the part, definitely.
He looks the part, yeah, but it just average.
But when I watched him, I was like, you know, I think it didn't necessarily. I mean, it fits for the Snyderverse in that the Snyderverse is trying to be a darker and grittier version. But I thought the thing that was missing with Superman was that he's supposed to be like the one bit of optimism in a bleak world.
Yeah, and you don't really get that through Henry Cavill.
No, although I will say he didn't do a bad job. I think that was all just Snyder direction.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of miscasts in the Snyderverse.
You said Spider-Verse or Snyderverse?
Snyderverse and his little DCU.
Yeah, I mean, I personally didn't mind Ben Affleck as Batman.
He did a decent job, better than I thought he would.
I think he needed his own movie first, though.
Yeah, but really the only like two correct castings he got right was Jason Momoa as Aquaman and Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman.
And yeah, and even both of those, I'm not saying they're bad, but I could take them or leave them. Yeah. I mean, I could picture other people playing them. But
yeah,
that's just a little ground. And my thoughts of the one that I think did it much better was the DC animated Justice League series. You kind of had a more balanced Superman Clark Kent.
Yeah.
But how did I feel about this Superman? Also, it takes place in the 70s, which I already said. 70s isn't usually necessarily my go-to, although...
This movie was 70s.
This movie was 70s. And I'll say one thing in its favor, something so we can kind of go right into the plot of this real quick.
Yeah.
Because you start off with that classic John Williams score.
Yeah.
I love John Williams' music.
Oh, yeah.
And John Williams, I knew very little about the movie with Christopher Reeve, but I did recognize that dun da dun da 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 dun. I did,
yeah.
And you know what? It made me feel good when I was like, you know, I imagine being a comic book nerd in the 70s, and I just kind of put myself in there. And then when that music hit, I was like, man, I would have been having so much fun if I was a comic book movie, and this was the first Superman coming on screen, or first time I've seen Superman.
My problem with, like, the first hour of this movie is it's, like, Superman's origin. And being in our time and date, we've seen it so many times.
Yeah, the first hour in this, you do kind of, you get all the backstory, which I imagine that you, even if you're not a comic book fan, you pretty much know who Superman is.
Yeah.
He is, his dad is Jor-El. He was originally from Krypton, a planet that was doomed to be destroyed by its sun that's also exploding. They manage to get their son, Jor-El, and his wife get their son out of orbit, or they shoot him off in a space pod before the explosion, and it makes its way to Earth, where he is taken by an old Kansas family or old Kansas couple from Smallville.
Smallville, USA, baby.
Smallville, USA, old Ma and Pa Kent.
Yeah.
Who immediately notice, wow, this kid's different. He's like 4 years old and he's lifting up our car.
Yeah, like how the dad was like, no, we can't take him in. And then as soon as he lifts the truck, like, oh.
Okay, well, maybe. Then he saw a money opportunity and he's like, well, maybe.
Oh, he's a good farmhand, yeah.
He's a good farmhand. Yeah. He's like, we can't. We don't know this kid. We got to take him to the police. And
yeah, he came from a spaceship, yeah.
He came from a spaceship. You saw this thing almost killed us. And she's like, oh, but Paul Kent, you know, he's got nobody. We could just tell people that he's from such and such or whatever, and we'll raise him. And I love the fact that he was like, fuck no, we're not doing that. And then he sees the kid's strength and he's like, well,
okay.
I mean, let's not be rash. Yeah. I mean, we do live on a farm, which apparently they're the only ones who apparently tend the farm because they're the only two people I see around.
Yeah.
He gets raised. This part kind of goes a little bit fast, but he gets raised by the Ma Pa Kent.
Modeling for like a scene or two.
Mm-hmm. He it's very much an animated Hercules where he's like, I know I could, you know, I just want to, you know, be like everybody else, but damn it, I'm just so strong. Everybody thinks I'm weird. And, Pa Kent dies pretty early on.
Yeah.
He gets a heart attack and just dies. when Clark is, I'm guessing Clark is like 15, 16.
I would say like 18, because like that, right after that, he just leaves.
Yeah, he does just leave. All right, well, here's a little problem with some of the story I'll say in a minute, but
yeah.
Which is going to feel weird kind of criticizing a comic book movie.
Yeah.
But after Pa Kent dies, he comes across, I guess it was a piece of his space pod that crashed.
Yeah.
That old Pa Kent kept in the barn, and Clark finds it. Oh, by the way, Clark Kent is Superman's name.
Yeah.
I'm saying this because people know who Clark Kent is.
Yeah.
People know who Superman is. It's like,
yeah,
saying,
I don't know why I got really confused at this part, because the part of the ship he finds, it's a green crystal, so I thought it was kryptonite. I'm like,
that's what I thought.
How is he not dying right now?
I was like,
he's just handling that kryptonite like it's nothing.
Well, this is before we know what kryptonite does. It's not important, really. So he packs his bags and says, "Hey, Ma, I gotta go to some. I gotta go and leave you to tend this whole farm by yourself. I gotta go. I guess find myself."
Yeah. So he flies to the Arctic.
I don't think he flies at that point. Yeah, I think he just hikes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I think he just hikes it over to Antarctica, and then he has that little green thing with him. And then he's just like, I guess this thing is just kind of talking to him, because he just throws it out into the open.
Yeah.
And then it creates his infamous Fortress of Solitude, which he goes inside. It's basically just this big crystalline structure. He goes inside where there are holograms and science stuff, holograms of his deceased Kryptonian father, saying, Kal-El, which is Superman's name. Kal-El, you should be of age now. I'm going to teach you about your heritage and teach you, I guess, everything from physiology to history to what have you. And basically, I'm going to train you to use your powers for the next 12 years.
Yeah.
I didn't think that it was going to jump that fast. It was like, oh, yeah. And then he spent 12 years there. And
then he gets hired at the Daily Planet.
That's why I thought it was weird that, because from what experience?
Right. Like, did they just hire a guy who didn't go to college or anything like that?
The only thing we know about the Daily Planet newspaper is that the guy likes how fast Clark can type.
Yeah.
But even still, you would have to know what you're typing. It's not enough to just type fast. You have to be you have to be literate. You have to be articulate.
Yeah, but he got hired there, where he meets Lois Lane.
Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen. He immediately has the hots for Lois.
Yeah.
I mean, played by Margot Kidder.
Yeah.
All the way from Black Christmas.
That's where I knew it from. Okay.
Yeah, she was the drunk. She was Barbara the drunk.
Yeah.
Black Christmas. Was that 78 as well? Did that come out this year?
I want to say it was earlier in the 70s.
Yeah, because we said that predated When a Stranger Calls and Halloween and the whole killer coming inside the house, coming in from inside the house trope.
Yeah, let me see that. Come
on. I'm going to say
1974.
I was about to say 73. But anyway, so yeah, he's working at the Daily Planet now. He's trying, and he's there for a little bit, and enough for us to kind of see how he interacts with Lois, how he interacts with Jimmy, and to kind of get the Clark Kent persona, which is Clark is very different from Superman. Clark is clumsy.
Yeah.
Clark is kind of a klutz, not very assertive. He's very passive and very kind of agreeable. And he's shy.
Yeah.
And he's like, always knocking into people. Like, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, sorry, Lois. I dropping things. Even walking with Lois, and they almost get mugged by this guy, and Clark has to pretend like, oh, I fainted.
Yeah, Clark is not very confident, while Superman is super confident, yeah.
Which we then see, because later that night, later on, in one of the nights that he's been there, and that he's working for the Daily Planet, Lois is like, I gotta go take the company helicopter, because there's a story
coming in, something like that. Yeah,
stories going on over here. I got to get in this copter, and we're gonna go.
Yeah,
I got to go do this interview. But there was a helicopter malfunction, and then we get the appearance of old Superman, because Clark's just clocked out for the night, and he sees this helicopter up in the air, and Lois's hat fell down, and oh my god, And I thought this was funny that they tried to have him find a phone booth, because in the old version of Superman, he would go into a phone booth and change his clothes.
Yeah.
But he can't find one, so he just goes in a little revolving door, and then he goes out. He saves Lois, saves the copter, and then we get a little montage of him basically just patrolling the city.
Yeah, saving the city and everything, yeah.
Which eventually leads to the Daily Planet is like, hey, we got to figure out who this dude is. This is an exclusive. Yeah. Freaking Lois, like, he saved you. You know, we need to find out who this dude is, where he's from, who his family is. And Lois scores an interview.
Yeah.
And now I will go ahead. At this point, I will go ahead and kind of give. Now that we've seen Superman and Clark Kent.
Yeah.
At this point, I will go ahead and answer your question.
Okay.
As to what did I think of him.
Right.
Right now, Christopher Reeves is my definitive Superman.
Really?
I think that Christopher Reeve played an excellent Superman and Clark Kent. I thought it was well balanced.
Right.
The way he plays Clark, he has to be bumbling and doing all this business. But then when he is Superman, there's still enough of him that is Clark that you can see that they're the same person, but not enough to be like, well, that's Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he's doing... Go ahead.
Yeah, it's probably in my top three.
I think there are only three, aren't there? Oh, no, there's a couple.
There's a lot, yeah.
I was forgetting the TV series and the Superman Returns.
Yeah, early 2000 Superman, and yeah.
But I will say for me, he's my definitive Superman. I thought, and even as he was patrolling the city... I think it's just maybe I'm just so refreshed to not see like a gritty superhero. This one just kind of was like optimistic.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what's been missing for me for a lot of superhero movies is the optimism. Because after The Dark Knight, everybody wanted to go dark and gritty over at DC Comics. And it worked for the time. You know, Dark Knight series is awesome.
Yeah.
And I did like the recent Batman. But that's my big problem with Cavill is that. You know, this is he's supposed to be not Batman. He's supposed to be optimistic, very happy, very like I'm just happy. They even showed him like rescuing a cat out of a tree.
Yeah.
Like that's Superman.
Yeah, I would say the latest Superman Tyler Hoechlin and the Superman Lois show.
Yes.
Does a great job with balancing like the yesteryear of optimism of Superman with like today's like grittiness of superhero. That's probably why he's one of my favorites.
I've seen bits and pieces of that show.
Yeah, really. I haven't seen like the last couple seasons. The first season was really good. And then I don't know. I think it's just childhood nostalgia. Brandon Routh as Superman and Superman Returns.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to give it to the 70s on this one and say you guys gave me probably my favorite adaptation of a Superman character.
Yeah.
It's very rare that a person gets both the... I still haven't seen a perfect live-action Batman in terms of somebody who was able to balance both Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Yeah, I think I really wish Affleck would have got his own movie.
Yes, because I think he was perfectly
cast. Like he was the closest, yeah.
I think he was perfectly cast as somebody who's been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
And I don't mind this whole segment just being nerd talk.
Yeah. Like Christian Bale, I think he got... Batman down. Great Batman, but as Bruce Wayne.
I thought Ben Affleck looked perfect as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
I think he looked the part, and I think he even kind of, well, we didn't see enough of him as Bruce Wayne, but I think the fighting style, I don't think that Christian Bale did good as Batman in terms of the fighting style. Well, maybe, no, I don't know.
Yeah, but...
The Dark Knight did so much.
The perfect Batman casting that we've had so far wasn't even Batman. It was Stephen Amell as the Green Arrow, which they used as Batman because they couldn't get the license to do Batman.
Yeah, Green Arrow was a great show.
Yeah, in that space. Yeah,
same Stephen story. Amell
played Oliver Queen as basically Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I mean, he was... Whereas actually, isn't he a little bit more quippy, like in the comics, and a little more like...
Yeah, a little bit more...
Jovial.
Yeah, closer to, you know... Similar to like Barry Allen, but no, yeah. In Arrow, he is Bruce Wayne.
Which, I mean, he was even trained by Ra's al Ghul at some point. I mean, yeah. Same as Batman, so.
League of Assassins, all that, yeah.
So, I mean, I didn't mind that. I watched the first like 4 or 5 seasons of Arrow, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite shows. But yeah, But yet, close to the perfect Batman as we've gotten.
but what I was getting at was that Superman in this one, I think, was a perfect balance between
Clark
Clark
Kent
Kent
and Superman.
and yes. So there's my answer for that, is that I loved him as Superman. All right, so he gets an interview with Lois.
Yeah, they go
Lois
on a
is,
flight together.
yeah, I can show you the world, basically.
Basically, yeah.
And answer, she's asking inappropriate questions like, what color underwear am I wearing?
Yeah.
Can you eat? You know, she's flat out flirting with him, but even, but I love the fact that even this Superman is kind of fucking with her, because he's pretending to be, well, he is Superman, but he's pretending to be Clark Kent,
Yeah.
is a way of, I've heard somebody tell it. Clark Kent is the persona, Superman is the person.
Yeah.
And Clark Kent was supposed to be on a date with Lois that day, and he's just bouncing back and forth. Like, you can see that he's having some joy being able to pull the wool over people's eyes.
Yeah, having fun with it, yeah.
Like they really don't know it's me. Which, I little scenes like that with him
Yeah.
smiling like that, I thought, it's like, that's perfect. Because if I was Superman, I'd be having a little fun like that too.
Yeah.
But there cannot be a Superman without a Lex Luthor.
Yeah, and where do you put Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor?
He is not my Lex Luthor. He was not bad. I would take him over Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
And I like, and it's not even Gene Hackman.
No, it's
It's what they, that for some reason, and this is something I heard about this movie and the series, when Lex Luthor was on, for some reason his big plan is a real estate scam.
yeah, okay.
And again, I'm going, my favorite adaptation of Lex Luthor is the Clancy Brown version, the one that's voiced.
Okay.
He's the reason for a long time I thought that Lex Luthor was black because of the animated series.
I'd probably
But
have to go with was it
Clancy
Michael
Brown.
Rosenbaum from Smallville?
Okay. Oh, he does a, do you ever watch his podcast? Because he does a podcast where he
Yeah,
interviews and
Inside of
talks to,
You. Yeah. Really good podcaster.
From what I saw of the one that you had mentioned earlier, the TV show of Clark and Lois, I
Yeah.
think I liked that. From what I saw, it looks like I would have liked that version of Lex Luthor.
Yeah, I didn't get to Lex Luthor in that show yet. Yeah.
I've only seen bits and pieces of it, but he's bald and he has like a biker beard.
Yeah. But no, the Lex Luthor from Supergirl, played by John Cryer, like when he was first cast, I was like, that makes no sense, because I only knew him from Two and a Half Men.
Yeah, that was
And
weird.
he was great.
Yeah, I saw the crossover.
Yeah.
Because I did a good amount of watching DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, that show's so funny.
And they crossed it over with, this is going to be like a 50-minute talk about superheroes and comic books.
Yeah, I loved all the crossovers they did when they was on the CW.
Yes, Superman, when they did the
Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow,
Legends of Tomorrow,
Supergirl, yeah.
that is, I'll say that is my second, Legends of Tomorrow has my second, I think, best casting in terms of like a superhero, and that's Constantine.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
That
Absolutely.
dude is Constantine.
Yeah. 100% Constantine. Yeah.
I love the version that they showed with Keanu. In fact, when I
Yeah.
first saw Keanu Reeves and Constantine, I didn't know. I was like, why is this movie getting hate for? And then when I saw this guy's portrayal of Constantine, I was like, oh, that's why. That's Constantine.
Yeah. What do you think of Grant Gustin as a Flash? I
I
think he
th
might be the
th
best Flash out
I
there.
th third best casting. I
Really?
think, yeah, I think that DC should have just paid Grant Gustin a big fat check and just had him come in to instead of Ezra Miller.
Yeah.
But for some, I don't know, everybody was screaming for them to do that. I guess they're just allergic to money.
Right. Because
Because
if they were to replace Ezra Miller with Grant Gustin, that would
you,
have made so much more money then.
the dude is charismatic. The
Yeah.
dude can be naturally funny.
Yeah.
Whereas with Ezra, it's always like he feels like he's trying to make you laugh.
Yeah. Where Grant Gustin, it's just kind of nat. The whole Flash show,
Yeah.
they nailed the casting across the board.
I'm gonna put this right here. Warning, you're about to enter into a long diatribe about DC Comics.
Yeah.
Continue at your risk. And I'm gonna put that snippet
Yeah.
right in front of this whole talking bit. So people will know that for the next 10, 15 minutes, we're just gonna be kind of talking about comic books.
Yeah, and like the Arrowverse, like what, 4 or 5 years ago when the Arrowverse was hot? Oh, it was so great.
I stopped watching after he went back to the island to rescue his son.
Okay.
That's about where I left off.
That was at the end of season 5 of Arrow, so I think it would have been season 3 of Flash.
Because he kind of buried the hatchet with Slade and was working with him.
Yeah, so, yeah, that would have been like season 3 of Flash and then season 1 of Superwoman.
And for the Flash, I dropped off after the, I don't know if it was the Thinker or the guy who was in a chair whose big thing was he was smart.
Yeah, I think that was season 4. Yeah.
After that, I dropped off. After that, the seasons just started getting ridiculous, and it deserves all of the hate that it gets now because it fell so hard from where it was.
Yeah, it did take a dip, yeah. But the crossovers always kind of brought it back up.
The crossovers were fun, and I personally think that he has way more chemistry with the actress who plays Supergirl than he does with Iris.
Yeah, that's true. And then they introduced Batwoman. Which, that show was terrible.
I don't know much about Batwoman. I mean, I know Batgirl, the Oracle.
Yeah.
But I don't know too much about that other than it really what. DC is weird because it also has shows that really miss the mark. Like, nope, I don't think I heard anybody who really likes Titans.
No, yeah.
But then they have a show like Gotham.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Gotham's great. No, Batwoman was awful. And it wastes an incredible acting performance by Rachel Skarsgård as Alice.
Didn't Kevin Costner? Oh, hey!
The train's here.
Train's here.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin Costner was in the crossover episode.
You mean Kevin Conroy?
Conroy, yeah. Played Bruce Wayne in a crossover episode.
I saw that, and he even dropped the whole, I am vengeance, I am the knight, I am Batman. I was like, oh, yeah, yes,
the
you are.
The best crossover they did, which was across 6 different shows. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, Rachel Skarsgård is Alice, who is, like, Batwoman's Joker.
Yes.
Phenomenal. The rest of the show is trash.
Last shout-out I'll do before we get back to our plot is Colin Farrell in The Penguin.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Dude, watch it, because it's a superhero spinoff show, but it's a, you know, supervillain. It is really good. Better than I thought it was going to be. You'll watch the first episode, you'll be like, okay, I kind of want to see what... It's a good show.
Yeah, I still have yet to watch Robert Pattinson's Batman, even though I heard it was really good.
It was okay. I feel the same way about that movie as I feel about Joker with Joaquin Phoenix, which everybody loves both of those, and I'm like, that's all right.
A lot of
it was
people
okay.
Hated the second one, because it was just...
I'm talking about the first one.
Yeah, the second one got a lot of hate, but the first one I thought was pretty good.
First one got Oscars, and...
We reviewed the first one.
Yeah, oh, we did, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I don't know if I... what my score was back then, but I'll just say, as of right now, between that and the Batman... I think they're both just okay. I didn't hate them, but I didn't like walk out of theater loving it like a lot of people did.
Well, I mean, it's hard for anyone to don the Joker persona after Heath Ledger.
Well, I mean, I think it was wise that they didn't have Joker as the main bad guy. I thought that the Riddler, I liked him in the first half. I didn't like how weird he was acting when he was being interrogated and started singing Ave Maria.
Back to Superman.
Sorry, I said that. I just completely forgot you said you hadn't watched it. Sorry, I as soon as it left my mouth, I was like, fuck, wait a second. He just said he didn't see it.
It's all good. It's like 2 years old now, so spoilers are acceptable.
Well, I don't think I spoiled a scene, but not the movie.
Yeah.
All right, but back to the plot. Back to Superman, he gets an interview. Oh, and we were talking about Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
So what he wants to do, and I'll go ahead and say his full plan, even though you just hear it in bits at the beginning and then later. He wants to blow up the San Andreas Fault so that the property that he owns in California or on the West Coast will be the only good land left standing. He wants to bomb the San Andreas Fault, cause an earthquake that will make... essentially hundreds of miles of the coastline sink.
Yeah.
And then his remaining property will be, like, worth billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Not really what you would think of as a big motivator in a superhero movie.
Yeah, because I'm used to Lex Luthor already being, like, a billionaire, so he's not doing things to...
Well, he's rich enough already that he owns all that side of the East Coast or the West Coast.
Yeah.
He even has an underground lair. This is a Lex Luthor. I guess he owns a company, even though you don't see it, because he's like living out of an underground bunker in the subway.
Yeah, he lives underneath Park Avenue in New York, in Metropolis, I mean.
And it seems as though the police are kind of after him for something. They're already, like, tailing him.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like a evil genius that the world knows about, but somehow he's still available to own land.
Yeah, it's weird, because you don't get, like, Lex Luthor genius from this movie.
You could tell that he's well-read and smart, yeah, but he comes like, off more as like a guy that would, not necessarily smart, but can convince you that he is smart.
Yeah, unlike other Lex Luthors where you're like, oh, literally a genius, all right.
Literally like a tech genius and entrepreneur, and this is not a performance that I thought, there's no way that this guy is going to get the better of Superman. He has two bumbling sidekicks.
Yeah, his sidekicks are the worst.
Are which again, don't need them.
No,
they're like the two cops. They're like the two cops in Last House on the Left. Don't need them there.
No,
but somehow he manages to get these two bumbling morons to. They track down a military convoy that's transporting missiles. And he wants to basically redirect the missiles so that they'll. Blow up the San Andreas fault, which he entrusts to these two bumbling idiots to do. One of them, who fucks it up at first, and the reason why I'm kind of at a loss for words is I'm just thinking there's no way that these three people can outsmart the U.S. military and Superman.
Right, like I don't buy it. Yeah,
but somehow they do.
Yeah, because Superman kind of fails it the first time around.
He fails the first time around. Lex Luthor. Manages to get the drop on Superman by televising his voice over a certain frequency that somehow only he knows that only Kryptonians can hear. He knows a lot about Kryptonians for some reason, even though it's a species that's never been introduced.
Yeah. Okay.
To the point where he even knows, oh, I bet some kryptonite came down to this planet, and I bet that would, and I bet that's radioactive, and that's, you could tell that the person who wrote the script for this, like, knew the gist of Superman.
Through some comics, and was like, I got it.
But wasn't necessarily sure how are we going to introduce kryptonite in a natural way.
Yeah.
But lures Superman to his lair, and then traps him there with a thing of kryptonite, and basically does the villain monologue. So this is what I'm doing, Superman, and this is how I plan to do it. And I'm not even going to stick around to see that you die. But I'm going to trust that kryptonite around your neck and this water, you'll drown. See ya. And then he goes and leaves.
Yeah.
Now, Lex Luthor made the mistake of telling one of his employees, oh, we got actually two missiles that are going to two separate places. One to the San Andreas Fault, and the other one is going off somewhere. So just in case Superman does get out, he can't save both in time.
Yeah.
But that's unfortunately where one of his employees' mother lives. And she just needed a reason. And now, once Lex Luthor is gone, Miss Trachtenberg, I think her name is.
Tessmacher.
Tessmacher, I wasn't close. Frees Superman.
Lex Luthor's love interest in comics, so.
It's slips Superman a little sneaky kiss.
Yeah.
And then it's like, go, Superman. Go save my mother, who's at the end of one of those missiles.
Yeah, I don't know why Lex Luthor, like, he said it for Hackensack, New Jersey.
Hackensack, New Jersey was where the other one was going.
Which makes no sense.
I don't know why.
Well, I guess since they had Metropolis set as, like, New York City, they can be like, oh, it's going to New York City. It's close. Well, there's Hackensack. Why would anybody care about Hackensack?
Why would anybody? Well, I'm guessing the reason why one's in New Jersey is because the other one is on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
Or the other side of the North America.
Well, I'm saying that's why they couldn't use New York, because Metropolis is New York, and that's where they were at, so.
Where's the closest place we can say, New Jersey?
Yeah.
But you would think that if you need a distraction missile, you would want to shoot it as far away from where the good guy is, because they're in Metropolis, New Jersey's just a stone's throw away.
Yeah.
But Superman gets out, and he manages to get one of the missiles.
Yeah, he got one.
He got one, so good on him, but the San Andreas Fault was hit. Superman, I love that they keep his powers kind of vague, because he goes down and repairs the fault.
Yeah, Okay.
That's what I mean. Like, I don't know how. He just goes into where the fault is, the San Andreas fault, and pushes something
Fixes it, yeah.
and fix.
All right. And in this, there are some aftershocks and Lois Lane, who is out in California doing a story. Her car is stuck in some aftershock and she gets buried alive.
Daily Planet apparently has enough money to keep sending her all over the place.
Yeah.
But yeah,
And
Lois
Jimmy
bites the
Olsen,
bullet.
yeah.
Yeah, because I guess there's no other employees. But yeah, Lois bites the bullet.
Yeah. Superman, so distraught in his failure, says, "Know what? We're gonna run this thing back."
By the power of my blue balls
Yeah.
that Lois has given me.
And he flies around the Earth in the opposite direction and reverses time.
I knew that was a thing in a movie, in one of the Superman movies. I didn't know it was this one.
Yeah.
I thought that came later, like in the third or fourth one.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we can now add time travel
Yeah.
to Superman's long list. He's impervious to pain. He can fly, can catch bullets faster than a speeding bullet, and now he can time travel.
Okay. Goes back in time, stops everything, saves Lois, takes Lex Luthor and Otis to jail, and that is Superman.
That's God bless you, Superman. You saved the day again.
Thank you, Superman.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
So initial thoughts, without breaking it down too much, just yet. I already said Clark Kent's my favorite, or sorry, Reeves is my favorite Superman, and Clark Kent, Gene Hackman. I'm trying to think. Like, I don't think a different actor could have helped Lex Luthor.
No, that was all. That all falls on the script.
That's a script error, so I can't really dock it for. So Gene Hackman was fine,
Yeah.
but certainly not my Lex Luthor. And I found myself doing something, and this will kind of give a spoiler for my thoughts. I found myself doing something that I haven't done in a superhero movie in a long time, and I was smiling.
Huh.
I liked this movie.
Okay.
I liked this movie. I thought it was lighthearted. I mean, the stakes were pretty low.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was. It wasn't world-ending calamity.
No.
But yeah, I liked it. And what were your initial thoughts?
Like I said, I really enjoyed Christopher Reeves as Superman. I thought he was great, but at the same time, I felt like I was really getting hit with like superhero fatigue, and I felt like the 2.5 hours this movie was. I guess I kind of got used to like the 2.5 hour movies that are out now of superheroes where it's action packed from beginning to end, where this one kind of, it builds to it, yeah.
Yeah.
But I just felt like this movie was kind of like middle of the road for me.
The reason why I wanted to pick this one is because I've been suffering from superhero fatigue for a while.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to see some old ones, see if there was some like hidden nostalgia for like the way older ones were done.
Right.
And like I said, I'm trying to think of the last movie I saw. I'll put it in context. Last movie I saw was Captain America: Brave New World. That was the last superhero movie I watched.
I haven't seen that yet, but I want to say it was maybe like a month ago. I ended up like binge watching a bunch of Marvel movies on Disney Plus.
And I thought that one was okay.
I haven't heard great things about that one, yeah.
I thought it was okay. There were some story problems, certainly. The acting I thought was perfectly fine, but in that movie, and with a lot of Marvel movies lately, they just kind of throw exposition at you, like as stuff is going on. A lot of
Yeah.
unnatural kind of like dialogue where people will straight up just tell you their plan and what they are doing.
Yeah. Like you can tell, Marvel's really trying to recapture that magic that they had with the Infinity Saga.
In this one, I can't necessarily dock it points for kind of being slow because it was made with the intention of like, okay, well, if you're not a superhero, familiar with Superman, we can't just go into it without telling you who
Yeah.
this guy is. So you're gonna have to have your lore.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, but technicals, very
Oh,
70s.
before you give your score, because it might impact it,
Yeah.
just a couple of figures for you.
Okay.
To compare it, of the movies that came out in the 70s, you had The Godfather that had about $7 million budget.
Okay.
Jaws had about a $9 million budget.
All right.
Star Wars had an $11 million budget, and this movie had a $55 million budget.
Yep.
I am just putting that out there because I don't know if that will affect your score.
Yep. Down half a point. All right. So, like I said, it's very 70s and the technicals. You know, some of the effects are pretty dated, but...
Yeah, I knew that going in.
Yeah, exactly. So I went with a 5.7.
5.7, really?
Yeah.
I went the opposite way. I thought the technicals were pretty good for the time. And I include the music as well, which that John Williams score is a very iconic score. I can't really see anything wrong with any of the technicals. And for the $55 million that they were given, I don't know how much other spectacle that they could have added. I mean, I'm sure some of it went to like Gene Hackman's pay, and they do take
just like comparing it to Star Wars that had 44 less million in it. I feel like the technicals in Star Wars was a lot better.
I mean, this I would say probably is, but what they didn't do on a technical, because Star Wars you expect to be science. I mean, it takes place in outer space. It kind of has to, and they go to different planets. Here, you're pretty much in New York, and you're in Kansas.
Yeah,
and with a brief stint, I could tell by some of the set pieces that probably cost quite a bit, like the very beginning of you see Krypton and it being destroyed and stuff like that. So I think I saw the budget more in less the effects, but like the scale of where they were,
okay,
and what they and what they were doing. So for that, I did give it a 7.7.
7.7. Okay.
Yeah, I actually thought the technicals were good.
All right.
Not fantastic, obviously. There were one or two instances where I was like, "Oh, well, that effect looked very, very cheap."
Yeah. But so for story, you know, plus is even though it's a little slow, but like the lore of Superman introducing all that, I think they did a good job with that, and introducing Clark Kent and Lois's relationship and the way he balances Superman and Clark Kent. Those are all good.
Yes.
The big con with this story is Lex Luthor plan.
Yeah, he's the reason why I kind of docked it down a couple of points.
Yeah, so I gave it a 6.3.
Okay. I had to split that from my enjoyment and my story, but there are instances in the story where it is very explicit. I mean, they have to give you a lot of information, and they have to put a lot of facts about Superman, and they don't always come at a very flowing kind of way.
No.
It's just like, oh, Lex Luthor just kind of figured, oh, this kryptonite, that probably has the same frequency radioactivity as him. It'll probably kill him.
Yeah.
Like, why you would know that, I have no idea.
Right.
and the fact that he's like, oh, yeah, and I went and I spared no expense to go buy it. And I was like, you have money. Like what are you doing with this whole San Andreas fault nonsense?
Right.
Plus, I think he also had said something. There was a line where he said, I'm against everything he represents.
Yeah.
But that was, he said that before Lois even wrote a paper on him.
Yeah, so like, how do you know what he represents?
It was just one guy out of nowhere who just happens to...
You're against the fact that he's out there stopping crime?
Yeah, that has nothing to do with your San Andreas thing. Yeah. Like, so yeah, I just gave that a 7 flat.
7 flat, all right.
Because I really, really do like Christopher Reeves. Or the story. I mean, that's for the story.
Yeah.
I'll go into that in the next
one. All right. So for enjoyment, like I said, for me, I felt like this is like a middle-of-the-road superhero movie. It's not bad. I've seen a lot worse. But it's not one I really go out of my way to rewatch. So I gave it a 6.
Okay. As I said, it gave me my favorite portrayal of Superman. And I don't even dislike Gene Hackman's performance. It's just they didn't know how to make him an actual villain.
Yeah.
But I actually found myself enjoying it. I had to kind of take myself out of the frame of spending the last 20 years watching superhero Marvel movies.
Yeah, I feel like that's a little easier said than done, but yeah, I get that.
And when I was like, okay, when certain things felt like slow, I was like, okay, well, this is back before the big popularity of, you know, comic book movies.
Yeah.
They had to kind of appease the people who, I mean, you could get away with that now being kind of quick and whatever because we've been so DC and Marvel heavy for so long. You don't need to show, like, the backstory of Superman. You don't need to show the backstory. You don't need to see Bruce Wayne's parents dying. I think at this instance, you kind of had to.
Yeah.
But I gave it an 8. I actually really enjoyed it.
All right.
The only reason I went on that long wind was just so I could be like, put my head into it. I would have been excited to see this if I was alive back then and it came out. And it was just refreshing. I got to see a happier.
So you gave it a 22.7 out of 30, and I gave it 18 out of 30. Okay. So average score is a 20.35 out of 30, which still pretty good.
Still above average. And, you know, I encourage people. This is one where, like, you say it's middle of the road, but I'm still saying that I would recommend that you go check it out if you haven't seen it, just to get another taste of a different portrayal if you're into comic books.
Yeah.
But I think that was probably the issue, is that the bumbling sidekicks were too comic book goony.
Yeah.
That felt a little too cartoonish.
It's like they took the sidekicks out of, like, the 1940s cartoon comics and put them in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, this isn't as funny as it is.
Yeah.
This ain't as funny as you'd think it would be in the 70s.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we're going to probably geek out a little bit less on this next one.
Yeah, this is Kraven TV movie.
And again, this was when I was looking and debating what I wanted to do for a double feature, I was like, well, oh, Wes Craven. And I still feel like I'm making up for all the bad recommendations I gave you for, like, homework last season.
Yeah.
So I always figure, well, Wes Craven, so even if he ends up not liking it, he can't blame me. He has to blame his buddy, Wes.
Wes Craven, yeah. Summer of Fear, or Stranger in Our House.
Yeah, I guess Strangers in Our House was maybe the TV version.
Yeah, I'm not really quite sure how that worked, but either or is the title. Yeah,
kind of the opposite of Superman. This one starts off with a car crash.
Yeah,
like just all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, we're on a speeding highway and a car crash.
Yeah.
Wes Craven knows how to start a movie.
Yes, he does.
Whether he knows how to end one is up for debate. But I'll get into that later.
I feel like he gets that down later in his career.
All right. Well, we'll,
yeah.
All right. Well, we'll just, does he do it in this movie? We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. So go ahead.
You
go.
Boom, car crash. And in that car crash, two parents and a housekeeper die, orphaning poor Julia.
Poor Julia.
And that happens on the East Coast, so now she has to move to California with her aunt and uncle.
On a ranch.
Yeah. And their daughter, Rachel. Or
Rachel, yeah, Rachel.
Yeah.
Played by Linda Blair.
Linda Blair. And their younger son, Peter.
Bobby, I think.
Peter the dad? Yeah.
No, Bobby's Peter.
Son, yeah.
Peter is the brother that's about her age, and Bobby's the young one. And I'll just say that I think at this point, Linda Blair would have been about 19.
Yeah, because this was, what, 6 years after The Exorcist?
Which I think she was 14 when she did The Exorcist. So she would have been about 18, 19. She plays the daughter, and she looked to me like a little kid. Maybe it's just the chubby cheeks of hers, but she still seemed very young in the face.
Yeah. Like, yeah, she still had those chubby cheeks, or it's like, still like a kid, yeah.
I think that's what it was, because I was saying, like, it feels like she's still a little kid, even though it says she's, like, 18, teen.
Yeah.
And in the movie, she's playing, like, a maybe 15, 16-year-old.
Yeah, I want to say, yeah, around there.
So, I think that's the, like I was saying, the chubby cheeks is probably just, she still has kid features.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she's now hanging with Rachel and her family, Julia. At first, things are fine. You know, she's pretty shy, and, you know, she's soft-spoken and whatnot. But then things fairly quickly start to happen, specifically to Rachel.
Yeah. First, Rachel's horse, Sundance, flips the fuck out.
Just out of nowhere, like, just runs from the stable where they were keeping him, crosses a road, all to get to Julia, I believe. Yeah,
tries to attack Julia. So then the family's like, hey, we gotta get rid of Sundance.
Or we gotta, like, keep him chained up at the clubhouse or something. Yeah. Like, he can't be around here.
Yeah.
That happens. Rachel finds a tooth inside Julia's bag.
Yeah.
That she, like, accidentally knocked over. And then one day she just breaks out in hives out of nowhere.
Yeah, right before, like, a big dance or something.
Yeah, she's been trying to get a dress ready so she can go to the dance with her boyfriend, Mikey, who I believe Mikey is he one of the ranch hands?
I think so. He's like one of the horse, yeah, one of the wranglers.
Which, I'm just going to go ahead, that dude is a groomer.
Yeah, I want to say he was playing someone who's like 19, 20.
He's like 19, 20, but he said that he had known her for like years.
Yeah, it's almost like they kind of grew up together. He was just a little bit older type deal, I think it was.
Well, the fact, all right, well, he's one of the ranch hands. And so she's now getting hives. Now she can't go to this dance. And just her life starts getting shittier
Yeah.
and shittier. She can't go to the
'Cause
dance.
Julia goes with her Rachel's boyfriend Mike. Mike dumps Rachel for Julia.
One after one night.
Yeah. Like, goddamn, dude. All right. That's kind of a messed up thing to do.
And just more and more, it just seems like the family, like whenever there's a little squabble or whenever there's a little like headbutting going on, they're always quick to take Julia's side.
Yeah.
And progressively, within like 10 minutes, Julia's gone from this shy whatever person to now, when she talks to friggin' Rachel, she's like got attitude.
Yeah.
And I'll say this: let's say that the guy is of age, Mike.
Yeah.
Her parents ain't shit.
Right.
Like he, because he still comes by, because now he's dating Julia.
Yeah.
And if I saw this as the parent, I'd be like, all right, so you've known our daughter for such and such many years. You guys have been dating. You now dump her for her cousin, and you think you can still come over here and hang?
Right, like what the hell? Yeah.
Get out of here.
Like, oh yeah, the parents always, I understand why they kind of always side with Julia. The fact that she's recently orphaned, so they're trying to make things easier on her, but still, they constantly do it at the expense of their daughter.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it started feeling like the way things were going, like that she was trying to phase Rachel out and like take her place in some kind of weird way.
Right, like, next, Rachel has this big horse show where Sundance freaks out again, rolls over on her, and Sundance breaks his leg, so he has to be euthanized.
Best actor of the movie, that horse.
Yeah, I was like, oof.
Yeah, and then they basically had to euthanize the horse right then and there, right in front of Linda Blair, right in front of Rachel. So
Yeah.
she's having, so at this point, she got hives. She had to cancel going to the dance with her boyfriend with a, and not only did Julia go to the dance with her boyfriend, wore the dress that Rachel was like she's
Making.
sewing, yeah, sewing, making, trying to make herself.
She criticized beforehand.
But then when she was wearing it, the parents were like, "Oh, you look lovely in it."
Yeah.
And the dad, being the thirstiest bastard I've ever seen.
Dad is a straight up creeper, dude. What the hell?
Do like at first, I wasn't sure if I was all right. So we'll get to it in a second. So yes, her horse had to bite the bucket, and Rachel is now getting some advice from her neighbor Jarvis because she's like, "All right, this chick ain't right,
Yeah.
and things are just kind of happening." And at this point, she has found shit in Julia's room. There's
Yeah.
like burnt horse hair stuffed in drawers. There's a picture of her with like blotches all over, like the hive blotches, as if it was a
Yeah.
spell or something like that. So Rachel goes over to Mr. Jarvis, the neighbor, and is like, "You know about black magic?
Yeah, you know about that cult stuff.
You know about this occult stuff? Happy to ha Very handy to have just somebody like that in the neighborhood."
Yeah. And then next day, Mr. Jarvis ends up in the hospital.
Because friggin' Rachel can't keep anything to herself
Yeah.
until like, 'cause she starts, she's so I mean, I kind of get it. She so hates Julia right now
Yeah.
that anytime she wants to like feel like she has the upper hand, she has to say, "Well, yeah, I know somebody who knows exactly what you are." And it's like, you just need some kind of victory. You're getting phased out and your parents aren't siding with you.
Right.
Your boyfriend dumped you for her. Yeah, so now Jarvis is in the hospital.
Yeah. And then Julia gets a letter from a friend in Boston. And Rachel calls over there just to kind of check out this friend.
Try to get some dirt, some background info.
And she realizes the Julia that this girl described is not the Julia that's in her house.
No, she not at all. She acts completely different. Like, oh,
Yeah.
she's part of the Glee Club, and she loves music, even though this Julia doesn't know a
Yeah,
thing about
she does,
music.
doesn't know anything about music. Oh, yeah.
So we discovered that it's witchcraft. The stark magic is witchcraft. And Jarvis, I guess,
But he's
he
up in
got
the hospital.
yeah he, he
Rachel
wakes
does
up
see him. Yeah.
he wakes up long enough to give Rachel some vital information, some very specific information.
Yeah, witches cannot be photographed.
To put on my nerd glasses here, they said witches can't be photographed because they can't reflect light.
Yeah.
And I said, well, the fact that we see anything is because it's reflecting light. I felt like such a nerd for some reason that I couldn't let that go, because I was like, if they can't reflect light, then that means all witches would be invisible.
Right, like, but okay, whatever. Let it fly.
Sure, but luckily mom is a photographer.
So Rachel encourages her mom to take pictures of Julia.
Which she was, and you could just, there's a scene of her trying to get her to sit still, and she's just like, "Oh, no, don't take my picture." And the mom takes a bunch of pictures, and Rachel is trying to tell her mom at some point that she's a witch, that she, this is that this that this Julia character is like causing bad things to happen. Which is, this isn't the first movie to do it, but it's the fact that, well, let me ask you, how would you convince me of something if you knew what you were trying to convince me of was impossible?
God, that's tough.
But it certainly wouldn't be like, if you wanted to convince me that a witch, like, if you wanted to convince me that a witch was taking you over, and you're under some kind of spell,
I'd
would you be?
probably be like, Chris,
Yeah.
think of all the movies we've watched.
Can't you
What
just
if anything
entertain the
happens in
pot?
real life? Yeah.
Can't you just entertain the possibility?
Yeah.
You've seen it. You've seen enough that, like, what? You've seen enough movies to just go, but what if I'm wrong?
Yeah. Yeah, you know what happens when you're wrong, Chris? We've seen it in movies all the time. You
People
die.
die.
Yeah.
People die. All right, but the only reason I bring that up is just because she's basically telling her mom she's a witch, which, you
Her mom
know,
just slaps the shit out of her.
mom slaps her and is like, I mean, you had to know that calling her a witch was not gonna. You know, it's like me saying, "Oh, she's a werewolf," and you just get laughed out of the room.
Yeah, doesn't go over too.
But she tries to get the pictures developed. Why she wanted to personally develop the pictures, I don't know, because I would have thought.
Well, what happened is she asked her mom if she developed them, and she's like, no, I'm not going to do it till after her trip tomorrow. She's like, no, you got to do it because she's a witch, and then she gets slapped. And then the
Yeah.
mom leaves on the trip, so
She had
Rachel's
to do
like,
it.
I'm going to develop these pictures and see for myself.
No, the only reason why I say that is because she had had a conversation with Jarvis the night before, and he said something like, "Your mother would only believe it if it was from her own eyes," which is why, well, even if she did do the photos, it's not like she can show them to her mom. Her mom could just be thinking, "Oh, you took some other pictures," because it's just she develops the pictures, and the pictures are just of like Mike holding like an empty space. There's no. Because I guess the sun can't reflect the clothes either. Because it's just the clothes are invisible too. But you know, if she tried to bring that photo to her mom, she would have probably thought you just took a different picture. You know what I mean?
So the mom goes on her trip and doesn't take Julia with her because Julia's sick, and Rachel's like, oh no, she didn't go. So she develops pictures, sees that she's not there. And when Julia comes in, and she's like, yeah, I'm not Julia. I was their housekeeper, Sarah Brown.
Dun dun dum.
Dun, dun, dun. They have a little bit of a scuffle, and then Rachel kind of locks her in the developing room. Vade's her dad, who's kind of under the switch's spell.
You would think so, but he's been acting thirsty for a while. He was probably just thinking to himself, you know, if I kill her, maybe Julia will let me hit.
Basically. And then,
Because they showed scenes of him already, like even the mom saw them like one day when she was like in the kitchen, like eating out of the fridge, like they're dating.
it was just all weird.
Very uncomfortable.
So Rachel runs out of the house, finds Mike, and has him drive her to where her mom's going. And so they do that, and they start getting chased by Julia in a car.
Who's in full witch mode now?
And Julia kind of runs him off the road, and then Julia ends up crashing as well. Because in full witch mode, she kind of controls their car, does the
Yeah,
same thing to the mom's car.
she has like vague powers of just being able to do things.
Like, I guess, like, as Rachel and Mike are on the road, the mom's car is coming, and Julia takes control of that car and has it speed towards them. But as Julia's doing that, she kind of crashes off the road herself, and her car explodes. So the mom's able to regain control of the car and stop right before hitting her daughter and Mike.
So everyone's fine.
Everyone's fine. Everything goes back to normal. Rachel even gets a new horse.
A new horse, and I guess, and dad is fine, I guess, now.
You could blame it on the witchcraft.
Blame it on the witchcraft, which, even though I guarantee you that was no witchcraft.
Because I think he straight up says, like, oh, yeah, I don't remember the last month.
Yeah, I know, dear. You've been saying that every day ever since it happened. Like you do know, honey. I blacked out that entire. I have no idea what I did between those few days. But it's teased that Julia survived the car crash and explosion because she is seen being introduced as a new nanny for a new family. Dun dun dum. And that's Summer of Fear. More
That is,
like just like a couple weeks of fear.
like, 20 days of fear.
28 days of fear.
Not a full summer, but it's okay.
Not a full summer, but you
Maybe
know,
Stranger in the House is a more fitting title.
there were instances. Yeah, I think Stranger in the House is definitely because the twist is that she was not the cousin, that she was the housemaid. All right, initial thoughts.
All right, so it was okay. Like
Come on, man.
I
Don't
see,
let your love of Wes influence it. Tell us how you really feel.
like I've seen worse horror movies, but I've seen better. It's like I feel about both these movies. Like it was all right.
This to me, this movie dragged longer than the Superman than the Superman 2-hour movie. I don't think Fear should have been in the title, really. Summer of Fear, man, because you see on the cover, you see like Julia in witch mode. You see her eyes and all that stuff. She's only a witch until like the last 10 minutes. I don't know. This suffers from one of those things where, yeah, things are happening. I don't really care though. I think I still say that maybe I just have an issue with Wes Craven movies pre A Nightmare on Elm Street. I mean, I haven't watched Hills Have Eyes yet.
Neither have I.
I've only seen the remake, but yeah, I don't know, man. I agree, but probably just you say it's just okay. I think it's just a little bit less than okay.
I mean, technicals, it was all right. I'm gonna give it a little bit of a Weskin bump, and I put it 6.3. Especially, you gotta factor in it being like a TV movie. The budget
Remember,
probably wasn't that high.
Dave, who gave the $55 million Superman a 4 on technicals.
I gave it a 5.7.
Oh, 5 and you gave this one a what?
6.3, so technically only a half point higher than Superman.
Okay. I gave it 4.5.
Okay.
Technically, it is like I said, okay. It did feel like it was shot by somebody who's getting better, which Wes was. Like if you compare it like the way the camera was in this one to like Last House on the Left, he's getting better as a filmmaker. There were a few performances that felt off a little bit, but the music was definitely a lot more appropriate than Last House on the Left. I did find it funny though that there are no rules when it comes to car explosions.
No.
The first one, we see a car just kind of go off the road and then explode. Then we see Julia's car also like just explode midair off going off a cliff. But when it was Mike and Rachel, they just had a little tumble.
It's a little tumble. They're okay.
No, they're fine though.
So story, I felt like this story was pretty weak. Easy to follow, but still not great. So I went 4.7.
Okay, I went 4-4.
Four four.
Yeah, I mean it. I was gonna say I judge okay if I can follow the story, but you can follow the story easy. What do you think the biggest problem? What do you think would have made it go from okay to really good? Like I'm having a hard time pinpointing exactly. It feels like it drags,
It feels
and
like it's missing something, like.
it's missing something. But I can't think of anything specific. But it's just not there.
Like maybe a more explanation into like,
The witchcraft and why, maybe. Like, why is she doing this?
there's really no reason why she did this other than she got tired of being a housekeeper for one family, so she killed them to go live with like. But what was the end game of her plan?
That's what I was wondering. What is she trying to accomplish? Because at first I thought it was she was trying to take over her life, but then if her ultimate plan was to get rid of her, you would want, you know, it looks like she can cast spells on people. So you would want to get her on your side and then kill her. You know what I mean? But you don't want to have one random person who knows your thing. Like she was nice to everybody else, but like singled her out specifically.
Like she just, like that was her reason why, like she just really wanted to fuck with Rachel. That was it. But
And
yeah, like I think that was the biggest thing missing was like, why is this happening? Why are you doing what you're doing?
I think I said that there was no real build up to the dark magic plot line.
Yeah.
I thought it was like we were going to find out like it's an orphan situation where she's actually a killer or something. But it's like, no, she's a witch.
Yeah.
She's
like, okay.
Out of nowhere, she's just performing dark rituals inside of a room with the door wide open. Because she leaves evidence everywhere.
Right, like, she's a witch, but evidently she's not a very smart one.
They said that she was just coming into her powers, which I wonder if all witches turn stupid, like, when they start getting their powers.
Right, for enjoyment, like, it's not great.
No.
It's, like, just below, like, okay, so I gave it a 4.5. And I think that's being generous.
And I gave it a 4 flat.
4 flat?
I just don't know why. I just didn't care about these characters.
Yeah.
I mean, I did feel bad that Linda Blair was, you know, getting tormented, but I always hate the plot of we know something's going on, but this person has to try to convince everybody else that they're not crazy. But again, I don't know what I would do if I had to convince you that there was a witch in my house. Like,
right. Yeah, it's... But so you gave it a total score of 12.9 out of 30. I gave it a 15.5 out of 30. So average score 14.2.
That sounds right to me. Yeah. It's just a notch below okay.
Yeah.
But not like atrocious either.
Yeah.
What did he like? How many more years until Nightmare on Elm?
I want to say Nightmare on Elm Street came out in either, I want to say 82 or 85. Oh, 84.
84.
So 6 years later.
I'm trying to see how many movies. Oh, well, we didn't do it for last one, but...
Are you ready what I have in store for you?
Yes, excited.
All right, we are going to the year 1987.
We've progressed out of the black and white era.
Yeah.
And we are now in full on color and in my favorite decade.
Yeah. And so for my horror movie, I know this is a movie mentioned that you've liked a couple times, but we've never talked about it. So I went with The Lost Boys.
The Lost Boys. That's a good movie.
Yeah, and I'm pairing it with The Princess Bride.
Oh man, that's a kick-ass double feature.
Right.
I actually, for the longest time, I hadn't seen A Princess Bride. I was that guy where it's one of those things where like, how could you have never seen Princess? I got bullied into watching it because
I've never seen The Princess Bride. I've only seen clips, so I was like.
You'll so many.
I've heard
references.
So many good things about it. So I was like,
so many quotes and everything. You'll be like, oh, so that's where that's from.
Yeah. So I was like, it's about time. Yeah.
And I think the last time we saw Cary Elwes was in Black Christmas.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That should be fun. 87, you said.
Yep, 1987.
Just shy of the 3 year mark that we were cut off from.
Yeah, 1990 is the oldest we could go. Like, I really wanted to do Dazed and Confused, but that came out in, like, 92 or 93.
Oh, ever since I said I never saw it.
Yeah. God, you should watch that movie. It's so good.
All I knew was that Matthew McConaughey says, all right, all right, all right. I didn't know that was from where it was from.
Yeah, I think that's one of his first movies.
But, okay. But, hey, I you said it came out when?
Dazed and Confused? Came out in like 92 or 93.
I was going to say, this is your whole thing. You can break your own rule if you want to.
Yeah, it came out in 93. Okay. Maybe we'll just have a special episode where we do that.
Where we just do Dazed and Confused?
Yeah.
It's like, this isn't a horror episode per se.
Well, I'd probably pair it with a horror movie, but...
Just say, this is your show. You can do whatever you want.
It is, but we are doing The Lost Boys and The Princess Bride.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, pretty excited for it. If you guys are still here listening to us, like, thank you, and have a good week, everybody.
Peace. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Body Bag Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe, and leave us a comment as to what you'd like to hear us review, or any horror movie topics you'd like to hear us rant and rave about.
And while you're at it, you can find us on Twitter at Body Bag Pod, and on Instagram at Body Bag Podcast.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.